Our next presentation is by Tara Sullivan. Tara comes from Washington State University, and the title of her talk today is Linking Microbial Community Structure and Function Within the Acidified Soils of the Palouse.
Right, so thank you everyone for coming. Just a couple more talks and there's lunch, so good job for sticking it out. I am going to talk about microbial function in the acidified soils of the Palouse, which is characterized by this type of topography, but I wanted to start off by framing it in the larger sort of global thinking about acidified soils. So first of all, acid soils are a global problem, and what you're actually looking at here is a map of soil pH across the planet. And basically white represents the neutral soils, and anything in the pink to red region is actually acidified soils. And depending on the source of your estimates, estimates range from 40 to 70% of the world's arable land masses that are currently affected by acidity. And this results in significant yield and production losses all over the globe annually. But why is that even a problem? When we talk about acid soils, they are traditionally defined by the hydrogen ion concentration. But we know that as that hydrogen ion concentration increases, meaning as soil pH actually decreases, we have a whole suite of other micronutrients, macronutrients, and even organisms in the soil that are highly impacted by the soil pH. We know quite frequently we'll have phosphorus, molybdenum, and magnesium deficiencies while at the same time experiencing toxicities for things like aluminum and manganese. Aluminum in particular is really important, especially in Palouse soils, because it actually makes up part of the clay structure of the soil itself. So as the pH drops, that aluminum actually solubilizes from the clay mineral, comes into soil solution, and creates a toxicity problem. But we also see a whole host of other soil functions that are actually impacted, including nitrogen fixation, nitrification, organic matter turnover, other nutrient turnovers. And so these are the types of questions that I'm interested in for the work that I'm doing on soil pH in the Palouse. There are a number of different sources of soil acidity. There can be natural sources of soil acidity, whether it's the parent material of the soil itself or the organic matter inputs. But there are also some really important anthropogenic sources of soil acidity that can range from climate change to acid rain. But for the sake of my talk today, I'm really focused on this idea of fertilizer applications. We know that as ammonium fertilizers are added to the soil, there's the generation of hydrogen ions. And we also know that nitrogen fertilizer application rates, especially in the U.S., have increased as much as, I think the estimates are around 400% in the last 60 years, which is leading to rapid soil acidification in many regions where this is practiced regularly. So different solutions are a way to address the soil acidity problems. In many cases, we're looking at specific breeding programs or variety selection for plants and crops that are adapted to deal with the low pH or have specific mechanisms in the rhizosphere to deal with the aluminum toxicity or manganese toxicity, depending on the soil types. This is highly regionally specific, and I want to give a plug here. Actually, I'm working with the Small Grains Extension. Carol McFarland and Dave Huggins are working specifically on creating a series of websites and parts of websites for growers in the region to understand the soil acidification problem and ways to deal with it. And one of the first spots they were actually able to get online was looking at variety selection for our region specifically. But another way to deal with it is, of course, lime applications. We're talking specifically calcium carbonate. But there are a whole lot of questions when it comes to the sources of the calcium carbonate, other minerals that may be contained within the calcium carbonate, other constituents of the type of lime. Where does the lime actually come from? How far does it have to travel? And how frequently can it be applied? There are still a lot of questions about, we do definitely see increases in productivity. Yields increase after liming, traditionally. But over the long term, how is that really affecting soil chemistry, and how is that affecting these really important soil microbial functions and fertility? So this brings me to my work in my lab. When you think about disturbance, and when we talk about ecological recovery in macroecology, we have a pretty good idea of this idea of climax community and the functions that those ecosystems serve and how they work after disturbance. But when it comes to soil microbiology, it's less clear how the microbial communities in different soils respond after disturbance and how these functions recover, whether or not it's to the original sort of steady state climax community or whether it's to a new climax or steady state community, or does it even actually get back up to that original functional capacity after disturbance. So In our lab, we're actually focusing on heavy metals biogeochemistry, but we're taking this opportunity of soil acidification in the Palouse, which has rapidly accelerated over the last 40 years, to view it as anthropogenic disturbance. And we have some ecosystems where we can actually look at soils that have been acidified, directly adjacent to those that have not been acidified or cultivated, and then those that have also been treated, all within just a few hundred yards of each other. So this brings me to my research questions, basically. After this rapid anthropogenic disturbance of soils, right, so acidification, where we know that we're actually altering the mineral structure of the soil through that aluminum coming into solution, it alters soil chemistry, fertility function, and even productivity. Can that microbial community structure then be restored? And I've broken this down into three basic questions that I'm going to talk about today. One, is that community function resilient? Does it in fact return to that original functional capacity, or does it return to some sort of new stable steady state that may not be equivalent to that first one? And then which aspects of microbial community function are most dramatically affected? There's also this sort of third question that we're approaching in my lab about, can we also manage the beneficial or protective components of the microbial community in order to enhance crop productivity, potentially sort of avoiding the liming economic implications and potentially offering maybe a more long-term sort of solution to some of these problems. So to address these questions, we're utilizing the Palouse Conservation Field Station, which is a research location just outside of Pullman, so on the eastern side of Washington. This is actually an aerial view of the research farm itself. So the Palouse Conservation Field Station has been a research farm. It's a 30-acre farm in the region since the 1880s, used for research. It's primarily dominated by Palouse silt loam. There are a few different soil types within the Palouse silt loam, but primarily Palouse silt loam, sloping topography. As you can see, this is pretty characteristic of what we see in the Palouse. And the soils are highly subject to wind and water erosion, and so most of the growers have gone over to no-till, which is primarily what I'm focused on today, and Victoria will talk right after me about no-till systems and stratification. When I talk about short-term studies, within the farm itself, those are located roughly here. I'm actually not going to spend much time on those at all today because, like I said, Victoria will speak right after I'm done and she'll talk about those. But when I talk about the long-term studies, they're just over in the northwest corner of the research farm, and that's what I'm going to spend my time on today. So the long-term study was initiated to compare agronomic soils to uncultivated soils. And when I say cultivated, I'm talking about these soils literally within this area here are the cultivated soils. They're basically in a cereal rotation, winter wheat and spring wheat, and they've been in no-till specifically since 1996. There was one broadcast lime application in 2002, and then what you can actually see here are the research plots that are long, skinny plots that actually move out into the middle of the field here. And then directly adjacent, actually we sampled just over on the side, just off the photo here, are uncultivated soils that are in native grasses and forbs, and they've been continuously uncultivated since the farm has been a research farm in the 1880s. So just to show that under no-till, this is basically what the soils, they're very dark, very fertile soils, but we also had a heavy litter layer, just as we did also, I took off the photo, but we had also a heavy litter layer in the native grasses and forbs that we moved aside in order to sample. So we collected the samples this February, late in February. It was a really warm spring, actually, very early warm spring that allowed us to get out there. The soils were not frozen. And so basically from this point forward, when I talk about the three different soil types, I refer to them as native, limed, and untreated. So the native, again, is under the native vegetation. The limed and untreated are directly adjacent to each other out in that field that I just showed you a second ago. I took five replicate soil samples of each, and we took them to a depth of 15 centimeters. This is a summary of the soil chemistry, and what I just wanted to point out a few highlights here. I'll show each of these again as I work through the next graphs, but basically organic matter content is roughly the same. The pH is roughly one unit lower in the untreated agronomic soil. Other highlights would be nitrate is considerably higher, and manganese, iron, and aluminum are all also considerably higher in the untreated versus the native and lime soils. I wanted to try to get a picture of a number of different microbial community functions, what the genetic capacity of the soil actually is, and so I approached this using a GeoChip 5. If you're not familiar with the GeoChip or the GeoChip 5, the GeoChip 5 is specifically focused on metals, metal homeostasis, resistance, and resilience genes. It does actually include a whole host of other genes, as you'll see in just a second, including bacteria, archaea, fungi, and a whole host of environmental and ecosystem services. But there are over 120 genes involved in metals, resistance, and homeostasis. And then in order to answer that third question in terms of management implications and ways we can manage for the communities, we'll also be doing some cultivation-based assays to sort of back this up as well. So the first function I was kind of interested in, we on the short-term studies that Victoria will tell you about in just a second, we saw a huge response in nodulation frequency and nodulation weight after one season of liming applications in chickpeas. And so I was, of course, interested in what we would expect to see in terms of biological nitrogen fixation under native vegetation and then limed in untreated agronomic soils. May not come as a huge surprise, right, that we see the lime soils as well as the native soils grouping distinctly away from those untreated with where the pH is different by one whole pH unit. So just to revisit the soil chem, untreated has that 4.7 pH, whereas the native and lime have the higher pH. But we do see all 5 points within the limed community grouping together, meaning that potentially the diversity or richness of those organisms there is actually considerably smaller than what we see in both the untreated and the native communities. Other functions I was interested in, so these are just a couple of the carbon and nitrogen sort of mineralization genes that I threw into this particular analysis. I should probably explain. So this is a principal coordinates analysis of all the different probes involved in some of these different genes. We had, for each one of the graphs that I show you, it's well over 50% of the variability in the data that's been explained, but you can see for PC1, I give each percent of variability shown there. So in terms of carbon and nitrogen mineralization, we actually see more of a gradient here where we have the untreated acidified soils at the basically at the negative end of the second principal component, and then sort of a gradient where we have the lime soils not exactly back up to those native soils, but at least further grouping away from those untreated soils. Then because my lab is specifically focused on heavy metals biogeochemistry, I was also interested in iron, manganese, and aluminum, and wanted to see kind of what was going on there. And here we see a similar sort of pattern to what we saw in carbon and nitrogen mineralization, where the native community, all the way up to the untreated, there's something of a gradient that we see on the second principal component there. And these genes include everything from iron reduction, iron oxidation, but even also siderophore biosynthesis, which can then impact other metals and bioavailability as well. And then just to reiterate what we saw in terms of the actual chemistry was that the iron, and this is a DTPA extraction, I know there are a variety of different extractions that can tell you different levels of bioavailability of the iron, but we actually saw much higher in the untreated with the lower pH iron content. And even though the iron here seems somewhat similar, we see more of a gradient where the community of the lime soils did not actually approach that directly of the native community. With manganese, again, a similar sort of situation where we see the untreated acidified soils distinct away from those of the lime and native communities. And again, we have something of a gradient here in terms of manganese availability in these soils. And then the thing I was actually most interested in, because we're going to be doing a lot of plate-based assays looking at aluminum biogeochemistry in the lab, and we see a completely different pattern here, right? This is not exactly what was expected. But we see that the different communities are basically completely interspersed. There doesn't seem to be any grouping pattern at all in terms of these aluminum transporter genes. Granted, this is only 61 probes, which is a considerably lower number than the other graphs were showing, and all these genes are involved in aluminum transport or exudation of aluminum from the cell. So we could talk about a number of different reasons this might be in terms of the actual availability of aluminum in the soil. This was a KCL extraction, which should theoretically show you bioavailable aluminum in the soil. But aluminum chemistry in soils is really complicated. There could be a lot of micro niche, micro habitats going on in the soil that maybe we're unaware of. It could also have to do with the fact that aluminum is simply toxic, right? So at any concentration, the organism is going to have to deal with bioavailable aluminum. So a lot of different things going on here that we're going to explore further. This is only just the tip of the iceberg, even with the geochip data. And we're going to continue on with some cultivation-based assays to look at their capacity to deal with different forms of aluminum, and then even solubilizing different forms of aluminum. So just to revisit the initial research questions. So first of all, was community function resilient? Well, as in good science, it's yes and no. It depends, right? So it depends on which scientific function or which specific functions we're actually talking about. Obviously, biological nitrogen fixation was heavily affected, but it did look like it was somewhat resilient, as were mineralization activities and potentially manganese cycling. But which functions were most dramatically impacted, I sort of show what we seem to see in just the few analyses that I've done so far. But that also aluminum homeostasis genes seem relatively unaffected by treatment, by soil chemistry, or by vegetation type, which again was also fairly surprising. And then can we manage for the beneficial microbial community? And this is basically a question yet to be answered. We're continuing on with this work in my lab. So with that, thank you all for coming. Do I have time for questions? Not really. Okay.
Probably have opportunity later on.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. All right.